I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Smith rifles that one to Mims. And that's a foot race he's going to win. Touchdown, Baylor. Denzel Mims with another monster score of 70 yards. Five straight games, Anthony, where he's got a touchdown catch of over 20.
That's deflected and picked up Mosey. He'll take it in. It's a pick six.
Fell into the middle of that line, and it's a touchdown.
Big return for Crowder, 85 yards.
Darnold escapes, trying to buy himself some time, fires end zone, it's caught. Incredible play by Darnold.
Hill hit immediately when he got the handoff.
You know
and
who
it's the Q-inator.
Oh my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the TOJ Digital Studio, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And it's time to dip into the mailbag with the owner, the operator, the lead reporter, the whole shebang over at JetsInsider.com. And of course, above all that, a very big deal, Mr. Chris Nimbley. Let's dip into the mailbag. Question comes in from John McAnally. He says, there have got to be players on other teams' practice squads that are better than the bottom tier of our 53-man roster. Why isn't Joe Douglas churning the bottom of the roster and looking for young talent that could help this year and beyond? I don't know that he isn't doing that. It's a very strange year, though, with Corona. Nobody knows exactly how much anybody can really see of these guys. I will say, though, that I hope that he at least gets a couple of decent finds. Remember, you never know who you're going to get off somebody's practice squad. At one point, Raheem Mostert was on the Jets practice squad, and look at what he's doing now with the San Francisco 49ers. So, yeah, I'm sure he's monitoring things, and I do hope that he's able to pull something off. Not necessarily that he gets a superstar, but even if he can get some young players that can come in here and shake things up a little bit and at least compete for a spot next year, that would be a considerable win considering what we've been watching right now.
There, you do have to remember that teams can protect certain players on the practice squad. I forget the exact rules there, but so there's some protecting going on there. So you can't just grab anybody you want off of other teams' practice squads. So that could play a part in this as well. But yeah, you know, this is such a weird year, and I'm certain that Joe Douglas is not just not trying. Like, I know I threw maybe a triple negative in there, so that didn't make sense. But I'm certain that he is taking a look and he's thinking about things, and maybe he's got some people he has his eye on. But it's also you do have to consider the construction and makeup of this roster right now and all the injuries they have. Especially, like, look at the offensive line right now. We know the wide receivers that they had. So maybe in week two there was a cornerback. Well, cornerback was another need too. So maybe there's somebody that he would have really liked, but he was like, man, we really need to get a receiver this week. I don't have the roster spot flexibility to get this guy now. And so maybe now it's the same way with the offensive line. Maybe there's, a middle linebacker, an outside, whatever, a running back, whoever that he really likes that could develop. But he's like, we need to use this to go pick up an extra offensive lineman this week. So there's a lot of factors in this as well. It's not just as simple as just being like, hey, let's just go scoop up every guy that I like. You could go that way, but they have to work with trying to have enough offensive linemen. You have to dress a certain amount of offensive linemen. So it's there's just so many moving parts here. And I'm sure there's people around the league that Joe Douglas thinks could possibly develop and be a good player in a year or two. But how much and is that worth it for the other positions? I think that can make it a little bit tricky here.
Next question comes in from Damian Shaw. He says, when will the Jets catch up to the modern NFL? Hopefully soon, because I would like to watch some good football.
Well, I'm the coaching to where football is going. I hope this isn't where football is going. The rest of football seems to be going a completely different direction. So, I mean, listen, Trevor Lawrence and a good coach can help. But, you know, you know what the real answer is. You knew what the real answer was when you typed this question out. And it's different ownership.
Next question comes in from Say My Name. If he says, any idea what's going on with Mims? I know he's on IR. Is he ever coming back? I have to be honest with you, Chris. I'm starting to get a Devin Smith vibe from Denzel Mims. And I don't mean that they're similar players or that he's necessarily going to be a bust. But what I am saying is, if you remember, Devin Smith got hurt and then he barely played the first year. I hate to say it, but I feel like that just might be where we're headed with this. This Mims injury early in camp was described as not that big of a deal. And then as time wore on, the more you heard whispers, it just seemed like it was way worse than people expected. And I wonder if Mims is ever going to make any kind of real impact in year number one, or if this injury is just going to keep lingering.
I mean, I can go a little bit of a flip side here, though. I can talk about Odell Beckham's rookie year and about him missing training camp in the beginning of the season with a hamstring injury, too. Now, that's probably not the best case, because Odell Beckham has continued to have injuries throughout his career as well. But, you know, Mims had the hamstring and then he came back and then he tore the other hamstring. But here's the thing. He's on IR, so he had to sit out 3 weeks. So last week, last night, and the Cardinals game, that'll be 3 weeks. After the Cardinals game, he's eligible to come off IR. And if he's not off IR and playing that following week, then we're going to really have some concerns here about what's going on. But he's eligible after the Cardinals game, so we'll have to look and see what happens there. I would think that he will probably be active. I wouldn't expect him to be playing like 50, 60 snaps that first game. But I think you're going to see him within the next couple of weeks after that. If we don't, then you can definitely start having those types of concerns and that panic. Again, this is just a weird offseason, and it's just a weird season because, just, I mean, the Lawrence Cager injury last night, like, I was watching that. I don't even know how that happened. That looked like maybe that had to be a turf monster thing. I don't even know what happened there. And it's not just the Jets here, all these other teams. The Broncos had them as well. It's the only reason why that game was even close. You know, we've talked about the 49ers, all their injuries, and how that hasn't stopped Kyle Shanahan from coaching clinics being dealt out to everybody else. I'm not going to go that far with the Mims thing yet, but it, obviously after that Cardinals game, if he's not back, then we can start getting really concerned about it.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Chris, I have some very good news for you. Our next question comes in from your favorite person on earth, Peter J. Dillard.
Yes.
And you know what he's about to say. You know the word he's about to use. So get yourself ready. Here it comes. He says, gentlemen, please tell me I am wrong and that JD is not the usurper's lackey.
Oh, man. That feels so good in my eardrum. It's like massage for my eardrums. If Joe Douglas genuinely believes that Adam Gase should keep his job, then that's enough reason for me to fire Joe Douglas. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's the case. And I don't know that Christopher Johnson didn't just say to Joe Douglas, hey, we're not firing him until after the season at least. That's just like, that's it. You don't have a say. You have to wait until after the season to make a decision. It's entirely possible that that's the case. And it's believable that that's something the Johnsons would do. So as long as I think that that might be a possibility, I'm going to withhold judgment on trying to, you know, how much blame does Joe Douglas get for Gase still being here? Because this is the Johnsons. If this was another organization, then I'd be willing to put more on Joe Douglas, but I know how the Johnsons operate, and this that makes total sense to me that they would say that. I do not know that that has been said. I've had people posit that it's a possibility, but I do not. I don't have a single person that told me that that is what's happened. But knowing the Johnsons, that makes all the sense in the world to me. That's almost what I'd expect them to do. So it's hard for me to really sit here and be like, oh, I'm going to crush Joe Douglas for not throwing a fit that Gase should be fired now. Because I think there's a very real possibility he was just told it's not happening. Don't ask.
If Joe Douglas isn't respected enough by the Johnsons, that if he was adamant about Adam Gase being removed, that they wouldn't even really take him seriously, then that just shows you once again how bad the dysfunction in the organization is. And if he's not putting up a major fight regardless, then that shows you that Joe Douglas doesn't have the stomach for this. So either way, this doesn't reflect well on the organization. I guess the best case scenario, if you're somebody that is holding out hope for Joe Douglas, is that he was told to stand down and he just realizes it's not a fight that he can win. But even so, you've got to be going to the mat and doing everything you can at this point to try and convince ownership, because as we've said, with each day that goes by and Adam Gase is still here, that's another day that Sam Darnold continues to slip into the abyss. But this does bring into question the reporting structure, which JP Waxer asks about. He says, guys, can the Jets finally please get rid of this reporting structure so that the coach reports to the general manager? End this ridiculous kabuki theater. I'm with you. The decision whether or not to fire Adam Gase should be in the hands of Joe Douglas. And I understand that the Johnsons do own the team, so they're going to have some say, but they should be there to back the decision, not to tell Joe Douglas what he can and can't do.
This has been a problem as long as I've covered this team. It goes back beyond that as well. But this reporting structure is ridiculous. And, yeah, of course, the owner is always going to have some say. But if I'm an owner of a team and a GM wants to fire a coach that I'm, like, absolutely opposed to, then I'm probably going to fire the GM at that point. And if he wants to keep a coach that I absolutely want to fire, then I'm probably going to fire them both. It's so backwards, and it's so not how the good organizations run things. You have to have a top-down structure. The way it's lined up pits them against each other. It's what we got when we had Rex and Idzik. They were working on two different timelines. It's what we had with Gase and Maccagnan, and which is what allowed Gase the backdoor channels to get Maccagnan fired. And it's just a recipe for disaster. You can't allow that option. There's a reason why organizations are set up like this, and why going behind back and skipping ahead on the chain of command ends up backfiring if anyone finds out about it. You can't have people set up that way. It just creates too much division, and everyone needs to be on the same page. But this is how the Johnsons have stubbornly continued to choose to run the organization. And this is why I always come back to the organization is the problem. The ownership's the problem. How can it not be the problem?
Next question comes in from Gangrene for Life. Gentlemen, I know that Joe Flacco made his debut in the game on Thursday night against the Broncos, but why didn't the Jets just put him on IR and use the roster spot more efficiently the first 3 weeks? I don't understand what the rationale is here. I don't understand it either. They had to carry all these quarterbacks. As I joked with Manish, I think this is like thing number 855,000 that I would complain about with the Jets right now, but it's definitely a curious decision, and I've yet to get a satisfying explanation for it.
The only semi-decent explanation I can think of is that, you know, around week one and week two, that they thought that maybe he'd come back quicker, and so that they didn't want to put him on the IR, and then it ended up taking a little longer. But even that's like, But this is one of those things where, again, it's a weird, crazy year because I'm not actually in the facility all day. I'm not getting as much information and talking about as much stuff. But mainly the big thing here is there's just so much wrong. And like you said, this is like the 8,000th thing you're worried about. There's just so much wrong and so much to talk about that I can't get to it all. And I can't spend every second trying to unearth what's the root of each and every problem. And yeah, it certainly seems like poor roster management. I don't see how you could really say anything otherwise at this point. But it's so far down the list of the problems that I just don't have the time to sit here and dig around to try to figure out why that's a problem.
Chris, I wonder what the betting lines would be on who the next Jets head coach is going to be. I wish that I could go over to my bookie and bet on that right now because the odds would be fascinating. Can't bet on that yet, but there's so much more that you can bet on. You can bet on all the rest of the Jets games throughout the year. You can bet on any of the games you want. Plus, you can bet on all kinds of other sporting events, props, and anything else you like over at MyBookie right now. Use the promo code OVERTIME, and you can get yourself up to $1,000 in free play and double your first deposit. And as Chris said earlier, if you want to make some money, your best bet is to bet against the Jets the rest of the year. So head over to MyBookie right now. Use the promo code OVERTIME, and you can get up to $1,000 in free play and double your first deposit. As I said, I wish that you could bet on who the next Jets head coach would be, or there were betting lines at least, because it would be really fascinating to see what Vegas would have in terms of who's going to be the odds on favorite. And that leads into our next question from Michael Christopher. He says, what coaches are at the top of your list for next season when they hopefully fire Gase? Rank these and others you have. He lists Eric Bieniemy, Jim Harbaugh, Ryan Day, Greg Roman, Brian Daboll, Doug Peterson, and Anthony Lynn, if either one of them or both of them gets fired, Dabo Swinney, and Wink Martindale. So I'm not going to rank these guys. Here's what I'm going to say. All of the coordinators that you listed are interesting candidates. Arthur Smith would be another one, the offensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans. But that's such a roll of the dice. And I understand that sometimes you just have to do it. All of those guys have done a really good job in different ways. But you have to understand that it's a major risk. So I wouldn't really be able to tell you without going through the interview process which one of these guys, as Chris talked about before when we mentioned Wink Martindale potentially being the next Jets head coach, I need to know what they're going to do in terms of building a staff, what their overall plan is to manage the roster, to manage the coaching staff. All of that is something I would need to know before I would feel comfortable hiring any of those guys who is an unproven coordinator. So I'll just say that all of those guys are intriguing prospects. And beyond that, there's not really anything else that you can offer. As far as Doug Peterson and Anthony Lynn, I don't know about Doug Peterson. I watch a lot of Eagles and I pay pretty close attention to what's going on over there. And Doug Peterson just looks lost and I wouldn't touch him. I know he won a Super Bowl, but I think he's been exposed a lot the last couple of years. Anthony Lynn is worth thinking about, but I don't think he's going to get fired. And then you mentioned some college coaches. I don't like Jim Harbaugh at all. I think he's been exposed a lot at Michigan. And remember, he was run out of town in San Francisco. The players got tired of his act. I just don't think that he's somebody that would work here. I think he'd come here and after 2 or 3 years, it would all blow up. So I know he's a sexy name, but I wouldn't go after him. Ryan Day, maybe. I'd have to really look into him. I honestly don't know enough about the ins and outs of what he does coaching-wise. Dabo Swinney, I can't imagine him coming here. Although, obviously, if they got the number one pick and Trevor Lawrence was in play, if ever there was going to be something that would entice him, that could be it. One guy internally that we've talked about that I think deserves some consideration is Brant Boyer, although the special teams haven't been great this year, but he does have 4 years of excellent special teams work on his resume, so he should definitely get an interview, I think. One name I didn't see on this list, though, who is still my personal favorite candidate, is Todd Monken, and I've talked about why a million times. He was a successful college head coach, and people will talk about his record. He went 13-25, but you have to look at the circumstances. He came into a winless team that was at rock bottom. They won one game his first year, 3 games his second year. By the third year, they won 9 games and won the conference. They had the deepest roster they had had in decades. He had developed about a dozen players from Southern Miss, mind you, Todd Monken, to go to the NFL. So this is somebody that has a track record of being a successful head coach at the collegiate level, of building a program, of sending players to the NFL. And by the way, one of them was Nick Mullins, who beat the Jets and just beat the Giants as well and was turned into an NFL caliber quarterback, even though he showed up as a 150-pound freshman. You look at other player development he's responsible for. Justin Blackmon was turned into the best wide receiver in the country at Oklahoma State while Monken was there. In the pros, he helped develop Adam Humphries into an NFL player. Even Mike Evans has said that without Todd Monken, who knows where he'd be, because he had terrible problems dropping passes and Monken helped him fix that. We know that he led the number one passing offense in the entire NFL with Ryan Fitzpatrick and Jameis Winston as his quarterbacks. So he's somebody that has success at pretty much everything you would want him to have success at, except being an NFL head coach. That's the only thing he hasn't done. But he has shown that he can lead because he's been a head coach before. I don't think that anybody should hold the Browns experience against him, because clearly he wasn't the one that was responsible for that. That was Freddie Kitchens, who was pulling all of the strings. And Monken has bounced back at Georgia very nicely this year. Georgia is doing very well. So for me, you look at that resume, he's got everything you want in a head coach. Plus, he's got a hell of a personality, which is perfect for the New York media. So that's the guy that I still think should be number one on their list. Whether or not he is, I don't know. I know he did impress Jets brass the last time, and he was the runner-up for the job. Whether or not that means the Johnsons want him to come back in for another interview, I couldn't tell you. I do know that he doesn't have any connection to Joe Douglas that I'm aware of, so maybe that hurts him. But that's the guy for me that absolutely makes the most sense, because he checks so many of these boxes, whereas a lot of these other guys are so unproven in so many areas.
Yeah, and listen, the college record was a reason why people didn't want Cliff Kingsbury as the coach either. That's looking pretty decent right now.
And Matt Rhule, by the way, they kept pointing to the fact that he had a losing record his first 2 years at Baylor. And to be fair, we don't know for sure that he's going to be a success in the NFL, but still, that seems a little silly to me in retrospect.
Yeah, and it's looking good so far, especially with the expectations that they had, but a long way to go there. But yeah, when you're talking about schools like Texas Tech, Baylor, and Southern Miss, that's different than you got a losing record at Alabama or at Clemson or USC. That's different than a losing record at Southern Miss or Texas Tech. Like, those are schools that are notoriously hard to win at. So just being competitive is a plus. But yeah, it's the same thing I said before. Right now, without having the information of who the offensive staff would be for Wink Martindale, Robert Saleh, something along those lines, I'm going to lean towards the offensive guys. The offensive guys are going to be at the top of my list. You know, I love Monken. Brian Daboll will probably be right there at the top too. And this is the thing, especially if they're in a position to draft Trevor Lawrence. Honestly, all I'm going to care about is getting somebody who is going to be able to not break and ruin Trevor Lawrence. And for the first 2 years of Trevor Lawrence's career, that's all I want. All I want is an offensive coach that is going to groom and develop Trevor Lawrence and not break him. And then if everything else around the team falls apart, then I can fire him and then I can move on. And at that point, I'm assuming Trevor Lawrence is going to be good enough that it's not going to be really matter who his offensive coordinator is. So that would be more of an approach I'd take. But again, if I'm interviewing Wink Martindale or Robert Saleh and they come and they say, hey, I'm going to bring these guys into my offensive staff and I like those guys, then I'm going to be much more interested in them as well. It's just impossible for me to put them at the top without having any idea of what they're going to do offensively. And like I said, I'd rather just know, hey, Brian Daboll or Arthur Smith, I trust them with Trevor Lawrence for the first couple of years of his career. And that would be the main thing that I'd be looking for.
Should add two things to what you were saying about Monken, by the way, in terms of the college record. Remember, you've got to look at the trajectory, because if somebody comes in and takes over a broken program, it's going to take time to get them back on track. That's what happened with Rhule at Baylor. It's what happened with Monken at Southern Miss. As an example, in the NFL, everybody seems to think that Brian Flores is doing a really good job in Miami. They're going to have a losing record the first two seasons, so it would be absurd to take a look at that after 2 years and say, Brian Flores is a failure, look at his record as a head coach, without taking the context into consideration, which is what happened with Monken. He took over a broken program, and within 3 years, he rebuilt them into a winner. They won the conference. Also, one thing that I love about Todd Monken that we have never seen from Adam Gase is that he has humility, because when he had Nick Mullins, who, by the way, as you said, Chris, you want somebody you can trust with your quarterback. Nick Mullins, as I said, 150-pound freshman when he showed up at Southern Miss. By the time he was done, he had developed into a guy that could be a legitimate NFL quarterback, as we have now seen. But at one point, Todd Monken felt like he wasn't getting the most out of Nick Mullins, and he sat down with Chip Lindsey, who was Nick Mullins' high school coach and was the offensive coordinator on Monken's staff at Southern Miss, and he said to him, what am I missing here? And Lindsey outlined what he used to do with him in high school, and Monken recognized that Lindsey was the better option in terms of play calling, that he would get more out of Nick Mullins than Monken would. So Monken turned the play calling duties over to Chip Lindsey, and Chip Lindsey was able to help take Nick Mullins to that next level. And I think that's very important. When you're a head coach, you want somebody that can be in charge of everything, especially if you're a great offensive mind that can call plays and be innovative. But you also want somebody who recognizes when he's not the best guy for a specific job and can delegate to somebody else that he feels would do better at that job without feeling insecure. That is something that Adam Gase would never, ever do, never, ever has done. It's something that's important, and it shows somebody who's confident, who's secure, and as I said, a true leader and someone who understands the players he has and the staff that he has. So that's what I would say about Todd Monken. I'm still, I guess, the leader of the Todd Monken fan club. But like I said, the fact that he built that program at Southern Miss and showed that he could be a successful head coach at the collegiate level, for me, is big, because with these coordinators, there's so much that you don't know about what they would do as a head coach. And the fact that Monken has done it, at least at the collegiate level, pulls my worries back a little bit. That doesn't mean that I would be against hiring one of these coordinators. It just means that I would certainly be worried about it, because it's such a risk. You just never know what you're going to get. So many times these guys are brilliant coordinators and then just can't put it together as a head coach. And that's what you would be looking at here. It would be a shot in the dark. It's always a coin flip type of situation, and all you can do is hire one of those guys, hope that they turn out to be the next Bill Belichick instead of, dare I say, the next Adam Gase. That's going to wrap up the mailbag, but before we go, I want to try and help you make some money this Sunday, courtesy of my buddy Walter Cherepinski over at walterfootball.com with his weekly gambling picks. Walter, let's fill some people's pockets this Sunday. Welcome to the show, my man.
Thanks, Scott. So can't really talk about the Jets this week because they lost on Thursday to the Broncos, but we can always bet against them next week. So you might as well start in the AFC East. I like the Bills -3 over the Raiders. The Raiders are going to be down 2 starting offensive linemen against a great Buffalo front. And so Derek Carr is not going to get very much protection this week. Derek Carr is going to be missing his 2 starting outside receivers. Henry Ruggs and Bryan Edwards are out. So he's going to have Nelson Agholor and Zay Jones out there trying to get open against 2 talented Buffalo corners. It's not going to happen for the Raiders. They're not going to move the ball very well. So I like the Bills -3 at Vegas. I like some home dogs this week. Lions +4. Actually, I think it's down to +3.5 or 3 against the Saints. The Saints are going to be down 2 starting cornerbacks against Kenny Golladay and Marvin Jones. The Saints also missing Michael Thomas and a bunch of other players. So they're pretty shorthanded, and the Lions are getting healthier. They're getting Desmond Trufant back. So I like the Lions here. I think the spread is mispriced. I actually think that the Lions should be favored given how many injuries the Saints have. So I like the Lions. Also like the Panthers +3.5 or +3. Either one's good. The Cardinals are missing 2 starting safeties and a cornerback. So they're going to be missing 3 starters in the defensive backfield against the Carolina team that has some very talented players at receiver. So I think the Panthers should cover this game, maybe even win outright. It seems like they're playing better. They won at the Chargers last week. So they're getting some momentum going, and the Cardinals are trending downward with all their injuries. Also like the Jaguars +3 at Cincinnati. So Cincinnati played 5 full quarters last week. They tied the game against the Eagles. The Jaguars, meanwhile, they have extra rest, having played last Thursday night. Also, DJ Chark is coming back from injury, which is huge. They really missed him against the Dolphins. So it's going to be a better-looking Jaguar offense against the Cincinnati team that can't really stop anyone. Cincinnati, by the way, they're going to be missing two of their top three defensive tackles. So the Jaguars should be able to move the ball pretty well. So I like the Jaguars plus three. I also like the 49ers minus seven against the Eagles. So lots of injuries here for the Eagles. They're missing three starting offensive linemen. And the 49ers, they have some injuries on the defensive line. Obviously, Nick Bosa's out. D4 is out. But they still have Arik Armstead. They still have Javon Kinlaw. Some other players have stepped up. Deion Jordan's actually playing well for the first time, it seems like, in his career, which is amazing. So I think the Niners should be able to get some pressure on the Eagles. And unless I'm mistaken, I think the Eagles only have two healthy outside cornerbacks on the roster right now. And Deebo Samuel is coming back for the 49ers. Brandon Ayuk is looking better. George Kittle is coming back this week as well. And the Eagles can't stop tight ends. So it seems like a nightmare matchup for the Eagles. So I think the Niners should be able to cover this game. Also, like the Packers Monday night against the Falcons. Depends if Jair Alexander plays. That's huge. We don't know his status yet. But if he plays, I like the Packers to cover against Atlanta team that's missing three players in their secondary. So you have to wonder how they're going to cover Devontae Adams. So I also like the Packers minus the seven as well. So those are the walterfootball.com gambling picks for week four. Back to you, Scott.
Thanks, Walter, and thank you for listening. If you haven't given us a five-star review on iTunes yet, if you could go ahead and do that for us, really appreciate it. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts, you know where to go. That's Turn on the Jets Digital and turnonthejets.com.